listening to Mind Over Motherhood.
Welcome to the Mind Over Motherhood podcast, your new favorite show for all things mindset, motherhood, and mental health. I'm your host, Dr. Carly Crew, a mom of twin girls, modern-day nomad, and MD psychotherapist specializing in women's mental health. I believe that life is full of challenges that can hold you back from being the best version of yourself and living your most incredible life. Your mind shouldn't be one of those things. So listen in each week as I share practical tips and expert strategies to help you manage your mindset, improve your mental health, and be the woman and mother you've always known you could be. So grab a cup of something delicious and let's dive in. Welcome back to Mind Over Motherhood. We are going to continue our conversation around relationships this week on the podcast, and I'm super excited because when I originally had asked on my Instagram stories what sort of topics you wanted me to discuss on the podcast around relationships, more than one of my audience members mentioned keeping the spark alive and discussing sex after kids. And so I'm self-aware enough to know that this is not my area of expertise, but lucky enough to know that I had somebody in my network whose it was their area of expertise. And so I'm very, very excited to introduce you to Kelly Swartz. Kelly, thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Carly. It is my pleasure. And, you know, pun intended.
So, and we're diving right in. With over 10 years of experience in sexuality and the erotic, Kelly Swartz is a graduate of the IIN in holistic health coaching and holds a master's degree and remains a PhD candidate in erotic literature at CUNY's Graduate Center. A frequent guest at conferences and has appeared on television, radio, video, podcasts, and other media on topics ranging from self-intimacy, self-seduction, to erotic literature and pornography. Kelly helps women have the best sex of their lives, the sex they need, deserve, and should have. And that's a bio. That is a bio right there.
Thank you.
So Kelly, thanks again so much for coming on and chatting with me on the podcast. I know this is going to be an extremely valuable episode. So why don't we just kick it off? Why don't you tell me a little bit about how you got into this work?
I guess I've always been doing this kind of work. I was always very sexually curious. And so I was always asking questions and making people very uncomfortable. And then I was always the one, of course, doing a lot of research and experience. I was the one who knew the most. So I was always the one, the one friend that you always have or long to have that you can go to and ask the weirdest questions of, that knows you will not judge you. That was me. So I would be like, oh, that's so interesting. Tell me more. Like, oh, so you're into that. How does that feel? So in a way, I've always been doing that. And then life takes you through an interesting course. And I studied erotic literature. So when you do that, you study philosophy and psychology and anthropology. And so it's a long way around studying sexology too. I also did a lot of porn studies. And yes, that porn. So you watch porn for work, which is for academic work, which is interesting and fun and also extremely weird, especially when you're dating. So you're like, oh, so you watch porn, and like, yeah, and you read a lot of erotic literature, and then guys would get either very frazzled or expect really odd things. Anyway, am I sharing too much right now?
No, I love it. No, I'm chuckling because I'm just imagining those interchanges where you're like, yes, I do this for work. And they're like, oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. I haven't thought about it in a while, but it was either like they would get very frazzled because they would think that I had these kind of expectations from them, or they would expect me to be like this porn star or this thing, which I am not. So yeah, it was interesting.
And now you're married and you have a couple of kiddos.
I have three dragons, which are a lot of dragons in my household. They're all really young because that's how we did it. My eldest is 5. My second will be 4 when this airs. So he will be 4 already when this is airing. And then my youngest is 2. So yeah, lots of dragons.
Yeah, very back to back too. Lots of young kids in your household for sure.
Yeah, so I understand when women come my way and say, and it's moms come and it's like, oh, I wonder how do you do it, or how do I do it? Because mm-hmm. I've been there. There's a lot of things in the world and in life that you can give advice on, even if you haven't lived it, right? Like therapists can give advice on certain things and do it. But I believe that in motherhood, and like, unless you know what it's like to be absolutely sleep deprived, and you know what it's like to have your body hijacked by a little person, and to need to reacquaintance yourself with your body after having this little person ejected from you, either you know, vaginally or surgically, giving, both are very valid ways of giving birth. So until you have done that, like, you just don't know. You can read all the books or have all the, think you have all the experience, but you just don't know, because it's not the same, right? So I've been there, I am there. Mm-hmm. I know what it's like to be, like, you know, snuggling with my husband and then having a 2-year-old just open the door and say she wants cuddles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. I agree with you 100%. I remember before I had my kids, I did a lot of breastfeeding medicine and like teaching, you know, latching and nursing and the whole thing. And I considered myself somewhat knowledgeable on it. And then I had kids and tried to breastfeed and was like, what am I doing? I had no idea what I was talking about. So I agree with you on that. I think that like, and motherhood is a unique experience in that no matter how much we try to like prep our, you know, pre-mom friends, like it's impossible. They're never going to quite understand it until they're in it. And I also 100% agree that like, you know, reacquainting, like how you said, reacquainting with your body after it's done something different, it definitely changes your perspective of your body.
And it's also like a hijack in a way, right? It becomes very powerful. You're making life and you're giving life. But then labor, I don't know. I have a lot of, I had very safe labors and, well, healthy labors. I found them traumatic in a way. I still have some, but I think we all do. I think not talking mm-hmm. about the trauma of labor, even if it's a healthy and easy labor, like your body's being completely hijacked by excruciating pain mm-hmm. and there's no way out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, we're talking about like not very sexy things,
but that's okay, because I think it's a good segue, right? Because it's like this is the background, right, that we're going to start talking about this. And I think it's important to talk yeah. about it, is that like I think part of, and you'll explain obviously further than I can, but I think part of the challenge around sex after kids is that your concept of your body is totally different. Like, well, I'm pretty sure yeah. when Ryan and I first became intimate again after having the kids, like it was such a weird experience for me, because all of a sudden I'm like, but wait a minute, like now my boobs are for like feeding my kids. And like, it was just right. this weird thing. It was really hard to switch my mind back to getting it to be like a sexual thing again, my body, yeah. after it had done this very course. Cherished, amazing thing. So.
And it's also the very, like, there's a lot of different levels. So the first thing would be, as you mentioned, right, trying, like, it's all weird. And the frame of reference that you have is completely different. So a lot of women that come my way, either in my workshops or clients, or just to chat, say like, how do I get back? That's the first question I get asked, like the most common question, like, how do I get back to the way things were? And my retort is, when was the last time you had loud sex? And it's like, oh, I can't have loud sex. I have kids in the house. I'm like, well, if you can't have loud sex, you can't go back to the way things were. Mm-hmm. Things are different. So things are different. So things must be different. Mm-hmm. So you can never go back, but you can go forward. Mm-hmm. So you won't have the same sex that you used to have before having kids, but that doesn't mean that you can't have amazing sex or even much better sex than you used to have.
That's a really good
point. So that's the first thing of perspective, of having like real perspective of like, no, you will never go back. You'll go forward, and the expectations that entails. And then it's the reacquainting yourself with your body. That's a whole other thing, right? Reacquainting yourself with your body, because your body is different. So as women, especially as women, throughout our lives, we experience sexuality as something external. We think that sex has to do with us and somebody else. Nobody ever tells us, and nobody ever teaches us, and we're never even like ponder, or very few of us that do, that sex and sexuality are within ourselves. That we do not need anybody else to be sexual beings. We do not need anybody else to be sexually objectified, because we can do it to ourselves. We don't need anybody else to find ourselves desirable. We just need ourselves. But because of the way we grew up, right? We grow up with expectations. We grow up with media that shows us, right? And in movies or television, we never see somebody like peeing after sex. So they don't get a UTI.
Yeah.
We don't see anybody being like, oh my God, this is so messy. I need to clean up after a sexual encounter. We never see that. We see other kinds of things. So we have the media, we have television and movies and magazines, and you know, and then, and we also have pornography. So we think things should be a certain way. And when they are not, we try to accommodate ourselves to be that. So we have that on one hand. And then on the other hand, we have the experiences that we have. So we, again, we try to accommodate ourselves to the partners that we have. So instead of us touching ourselves and discovering our bodies first in our teens or in adulthood, we expect somebody else to touch us and to reacquaint our bodies with our, by their touch. Mm-hmm. Right? I know many women that have never taken a mirror and looked at their vulva. Mm-hmm. They don't know what it looks like, but their partners do. Why would your partner know your body, what it looks like, better than you? Yes, it is. It does take effort, and you do need to get, you know, up close and personal, but you should know what it looks like so that you know also how it changes. Because it will change, for example, in pregnancy, right? The labia will change. And after childbirth, the labia will look completely different. So in the same way that we don't do it before kids, we should do it after kids, right? I have, again, I have clients and people who come to my workshop who feel very guilty about masturbating when they don't want to have sex, for example, right? When the question that everybody's like, oh, when did you start having sex after baby? It's like, no, when did you start masturbating after baby? And like, I can't masturbate if I don't want to have sex. Like, well, yes, you can, because one thing is the intimacy that you have with yourself, and another thing is the intimacy you have with your partner. They're very different things. And if you don't have intimacy with yourself, if you don't have a reacquaintancing with yourself, you can't have it with your partner. It won't be truthful to yourself.
I think that's a really interesting distinction to make, because I'm sure you've recognized this working with mothers as well, is that we tend to, as mothers, always be of the other, right? Like, we're always focused on the child, the partner, the this, the that. And there isn't really a lot of like focusing on sexuality for ourselves. Like, really, to a lot of women probably listening to this, like, sex is for the partner, right? There's a lot of like on this almost obligation towards like, I have sex after kids because my partner needs it, rather than turning the lens and or the mirror and saying like, no, sex is important for me as a person. I think a lot of women probably don't think about it like that at all. I would assume almost most of them that are listening to this probably don't think about it like that, which I think is super
and
important.
And also talking about intimacy. So when I talk about self-intimacy, which is a big thing of what I work with my clients, I don't talk about only masturbation. I mean, masturbation is great, but that's not the only level of intimacy. Think about you and your husband. You don't just have sex. You have conversations. You have experiences you share. You help each other. You support each other. You have so many different levels. You fight. And you argue, and then you make up, and you make peace, and you learn things, and you change, and you evolve. And you have all these different levels of intimacy that make you the partnership that you have, and that you are. In the same way, in self-intimacy, it's not only masturbation. It is getting to know yourself. It is spending time with yourself. It is self-care. It is doing things just for you. And again, this is extremely hard, especially for mothers, especially since we have all this notion that, you know, the moment you become a mom, you're like not important anymore. You are only, as you said, you're only for others. You're only there to serve others. Like, how dare you take some time off for yourself to watch some Netflix and zone off? Like, that's not okay. You need to be productive. And if you're not working or if you're not doing, you should be doing the laundry, or you should be learning a new craft so you can make, I don't know, Christmas adornments for your kids' school. I don't know. I'm just.
No, you're right though. Yeah, you're right. That we do, we tend to never look at like, can I just take this time for myself, let alone for my own intimacy? I'm sure that's not on most women's radar even.
So, and you would ask like, what does watching Netflix by myself have to do with sex? Well, it has everything to do with sex, because if you're not taking care of yourself, if you're not connected to yourself, you can't connect to others. And also, if you're not seducing yourself, you can't seduce your partner or be seduced by your partner. And now you'll ask me, well, what do you mean, Kelly?
What do you mean, Kelly?
So seduction is a way of feeling ourselves desired and of desiring others. And desire is also very important. And feeling desired is also very important, especially after kids, especially after our bodies have changed so much. And we are, unfortunately, we are taught to think that the way our body looks is the way how much we will be loved. So even if we are doing like a lot of work on ourselves, thinking that our bodies are beautiful, we, unfortunately, our generation, hopefully next generation, the way we're teaching our kids will be different, but our generation is still struggling. Like our generation still had and has a lot of eating disorders, mm-hmm. and has a lot of like image disorders. So seduction has to do with being desired, with feeling desired. Now, what does that mean after kids? Before kids and after kids, would you say again, like, can I go back to the way things were? And I'm like, no, not really. You can't. Because mm-hmm. before kids, maybe feeling desired meant like your partner brought like a big thing of flowers and candlelight dinner and rubbed your feet, or maybe, you know, or something like that. And after kids, it's like, you don't really need the flowers. I mean, they would be nice, but you know what? It would be really nice if when you're done with work, dinner is made. And the laundry's folded, right? Mm-hmm. And the bathrooms are clean, for example. So the seduction and the taking care of each other changes. It doesn't mean that the romance needs to evaporate and that from now on the only thing I really want is for you to fold laundry, although that's really lovely. And my husband is very sexy when he folds laundry. I do mm-hmm. not dare fold laundry because I do a mess out of it. And he's so good. I actually made an account for him on Instagram during the pandemic. And I would just take videos of him folding clothes.
That's amazing.
But so yes, romance can still be there, but the taking care of each other changes. And the things you need change.
Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, there's reason that a lot, like, that you could create an Instagram account and he'd probably get a bunch of followers is because women, that's very attractive to have men that help and support, right? I remember I was recording a podcast episode this summer and Ryan was vacuuming at the time. And I like felt like I almost had to, like, I was like, excuse me, I have to go stop my husband from vacuuming. And it was just like, what? Your husband vacuums? You know, like it was just like this, right? So it's funny. It's like what's equated to attractive has so changed now, like after kids. Exactly. And that's okay. It's not a bad thing. I think that's what part of the issue is that when things change, we always assign this negative meaning to them, right? That there's only one way to be truly sexy or truly desired, and it's the pre-children way. And that's not the case, is that there's new ways that are just as fun or as exciting, and that desire changes and what's attractive changes.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yes, that my husband, he did get a lot of followers, and it was like, oh my God, this is so sexy. By the way, the account is called He Folds.
Oh my God. I mean, I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah. I haven't uploaded videos in a while, but I will.
That's so cute.
Some again. So it was, three kids, you get a lot of laundry.
Yeah,
even in the lockdown when you're just home and wearing pajamas all day.
Yeah, a lot of laundry, a lot of towels. Yeah. So you've talked a little bit about what some of the women that come to you struggle with, but just so that maybe some of our listeners can feel validated, they're probably not the only ones that think these things or feel these things. Like, what are some of the problems or challenges that women come to you needing support for? Or with?
Okay, so that definitely I've had clients who are terrified of having sex after kids because their birth was very traumatic, mm-hmm. and they've gotten hurt. So I can't help with the physical hurt. I can only send them to a pelvic floor physio, but I can help them with their emotional pain, mm-hmm. which needs to go hand in hand. For example, this client, won't name her, but I'm allowed to tell her story. She had a really terrifying birth. And a double episiotomy, and it was like she was like butchered down there. Mm-hmm. And then she started going to pelvic floor physio, but she felt so much guilt over her birth because during the process she was asked if she wanted to have a C-section, and she said, no, I want to have a vaginal birth. Mm-hmm. And she felt so much guilt over that she wasn't able to do the exercises to be able to have intercourse at one point in her life. She thought that she was done. She thought she would never have sex again. So what I worked on with her, first thing that we discussed was how she hadn't been given the choice, because the doctor had asked her C-section or vaginal birth. The doctor didn't ask C-section or surgical vaginal birth, mm-hmm. which is what she had. Mm-hmm. And if she hadn't been asked the full question, then she would have, for sure, like she would have mm-hmm. chosen a C-section. Mm-hmm. So just knowing that, just figuring that out, just changed her whole perspective. And she was able to start doing her exercises. And we worked on for months afterwards, but she now has a second child, which is amazing. And her birth was really great. And she had a lot of information and she took charge and anyway, a lot of things, but she was able first to heal emotionally from the birth as well as physically from the birth to be able to have sex again and to know that she wasn't broken. A lot of women come my way and they think they're broken. They think they're very much alone and they think that they're broken and that there's nothing that can be done to fix them. And that's just not true. Mm-hmm. And that is incredibly unfortunate. I don't think any woman is broken. I think that we're all just on different journeys and that we just need different kind of support and help. Mm-hmm. So absolutely. All of you listening out there, you're not broken, whether you had a traumatic birth or not, whether you're just absolutely exhausted, whether your libido died. I have a lot of women who come who like just have zero desire. And one thing that needs to be checked, is it hormonal? And that I don't do panels, but I'm not a physician, but I will send them to either a naturopath or to their own physician to ask and to demand tests to be done because their body doesn't feel as it should. I have women whose desires have changed and they need to accommodate them. Mm-hmm. I have women who are not able to have a lot of pleasure because their mental load is so incredibly massive that there is absolutely no space for them or for pleasure. Mm-hmm. And I think that is incredibly common. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Incredibly common with moms. And if I can give a piece of advice here, would be we don't realize how much we're doing until we write it down. Or even if we're having a conversation with our partners to equate the mental load, it's really hard to do just as a conversation. There's a lot of on the internet, just like look for a mental load list mm-hmm. and download it and add on things that are not there. And sit down with your partner and look at it visually and see who does what. Mm-hmm. And most often than not, you will find that women in the household, in heteronormative couples, do about 80 to 90% of the things. And that is a lot. Plus working, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. most of us work. Mm-hmm. And that is a lot. And if you're doing that, you don't have space for pleasure. And also you have a lot of resentment.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was going to say. It's the resentment, I think, in that piece. And it probably even goes both ways. Like, I'm a huge advocate for like brain dumping as well and getting it all out. And that's the same kind of idea, like the mental load idea. But sometimes it can be even threatening to partners for you to be like, look at all the things I'm focused on. And then, you know, I've even seen that in my own relationship. And I'm very, very lucky. My husband is so, so active. I shouldn't say lucky because that makes it seem like it shouldn't be expected. I'm married to a fantastic man and he does a lot, but even still, sometimes I can find myself getting resentful about all the things that I think I'm carrying and he's not helping with. And it's very threatening to him, right? When I'm like, I have all this stuff and he's like, well, I'm doing the best I can. Right. And so just like kind of navigating those waters can be tricky, but it is super important. And to recognize that not even just the to-dos, but like the thinking about grandma's birthday in 3 months and the card and the this and that, right? And the planning.
Just thinking, it's like, oh, do all the kids have winter boots? And it's August, but it's a pandemic. And like last year we were like, they were sold out and it's August. And it's like, okay, let me see what I have in stock of the winter boots. And let me see who's selling. Mm-hmm. Let me see right now, it's even worse because like, let me see who does online delivery, but I will also want to support local. So I don't want to buy from Amazon. Yeah. So it's just like, whew.
Totally.
And it's, so what you're saying about the mental dump is, I think this kind of conversation needs to be done not when something big has happened or where you're like over the edge, but when you're both calm and the kids are sleeping and you sit down with some tea or a glass of something. Mm-hmm. I've become very partial to Negronis and gin tonics in this pandemic. And sit down and look at it when you're both calm. So it's not like, oh, look at what I do when you don't do anything. It's more like, we need to figure this out. And this needs to be an ongoing conversation. It's not like you do it once and you're done, because things change and life changes, and it's not the same to go shopping for boots in regular life than to go shopping for boots when everything's in lockdown, right? Or like, I remember at the beginning of the pandemic when most stores were not fully online and they were trying to figure it out, and just, and getting groceries was hours. It was just hours of being on the computer trying to figure out where we were going to get groceries from, not wanting to get, take an Instacart for people who were immunocompromised. And just, it was just like, my mom asked me for to do something. I was like, I don't have 10 minutes. I'm so sorry. I just don't have those 10 minutes. So again, so the mental load list needs to be checked on whenever any of the partners, or if you change things up. So check a month and a half or 2 months later and see how things are going. And it's like, oh, okay, maybe this is working. Maybe this is not working. Okay, let's switch this up again and see how we both feel. Mm-hmm. So for example, in my household, dinners is a big thing, right? And I have like gone down like mental dump on my husband, being like, and again, he's a fantastic husband who folds and cleans because I'm terrible at it. Because he'll just clean. When I'm like, I could clean, but you're just going to clean after me. So what's the point?
I have one of those husbands too. Yeah.
So like dinners are a big thing. And I have mental dump, like I'm done with dinners, because it's just like so much effort to figure out what are we having for dinner? Do we have everything here? Is it like going to be lunch friendly? Is it going to be, what does it look like that he will take over dinners, or wait for a while he took over a dinner a week, and then he took over two dinners a week, and then I took back all the dinners because it wasn't working out. And now we're doing takeout and then supporting local one or two nights a week so that nobody's cooking. Anyway, it evolves and changes, right?
Yeah. But I think what underlies this whole conversation here is that it's communication, right? Is that you have to have that communication about what's going on in your brain and what's going on for your partner's brain. Because like you said, if your mental load is full up, and I often talk about like using up all your mental resources, right? If you're firing on all four cylinders all the time, right? There's no room to be like, hey, let's watch a movie, cuddle, and maybe have sex for the first time in 3 months, right? Like, it's like, you know, that's not going to be on the agenda with this super full load. So it's like being really honest about what actually needs to be done. Do you need to do it? Can somebody else do it? Right? Can we defer it? Can we delegate it out? Can we share this equally? And having really good conversations and communication. Back, I think it's two episodes ago, actually, I shared kind of a framework that I teach. And so if you're looking for a way to have these conversations, if you're listening and you're thinking, yeah, right, my husband will never do that, it's a framework called Elevated Communication that I teach that just helps remove the emotion, or gives you at least a perspective of how to remove emotion from these conversations, so that it's just a really much more productive and respectful conversation. Because I think that if we start sharing our mental loads and it just dissolves into a massive fight, it's not doing much for intimacy. So I think, but that's so important that you talk about that, because I think that after kids, that is a huge part of why women feel that they can't, they just no time. There's no mental energy for intimacy and sex anymore. Yeah.
And again, if they don't have time to themselves, like if there's men listening to this podcast, or the women who are listening, just have your partners, you listen to this part, is like, you want to have like great sex, like give the night off to your partner, or give that, like have them in non-pandemic life, like have them have, or even in pandemic through Zoom, like a girl's night out. A girl's night out will do wonders for your own intimacy, because they're taking care of themselves without having to take care of anybody else. Or a few nights away.
Yeah,
I remember
absolutely.
The first time I went away, which was in January, it was the first time I'd been away from any of my kids and not being pregnant. And it was just one night. And it was like, oh my, what is this air that I'm breathing, in which I don't need to take care of anybody. I don't need to decide who's eating what and when and who has what, and breaking up fights, and just absolutely being able to be. And when you are, you can have desire. So I don't know if the women who are listening to this podcast expected a lot of like, of things to do with their bodies and how to touch themselves and how to touch their husbands, so that things like realight and realign. It is that what I work in, and that's why I'm an erotic expert. The things I work with is the erotic, and the erotic is the part of sexuality that uses our brain, which is our largest sex organ and the one we don't think about or use. So if you work on that sex organ on our brain with the mental load, with seduction, with communication, with self-care, with self-intimacy, and with just intimacy in general, then your body will respond accordingly. You can't work first on the body and then the brain. It doesn't work that way.
That's a good point. And I mean, it fits so perfectly with the podcast, right? Like, because it's Mind Over Motherhood. And I think I say this, this is kind of one of my newer, I guess, branding models that I say is that, like, there's enough obstacles in our life already, right? Like, there's enough things holding us back already from what we dream of, and our mind shouldn't be one of them. And so focus on the mind, right? Like, your mind will hold you back from having a really healthy sexual relationship with your partner and yourself if you don't work on it and you don't pay attention to the things that are burdening it. Cause I love that you said that the mind is the brain is the biggest sexual organ we have. Cause most women probably wouldn't have thought of that. So that's super helpful. So what about, I guess you've offered so many good strategies and tips already, but what about communicating with your partner? I think a lot of women find it very uncomfortable to talk to their partners about what they want or what they don't want. Like, I remember back, I did an episode, a relationship episode way, way, way early in the podcast. And there was like this discussion around how many times he wants it versus how many times I want it. And it was very like, very objective, right? Like, there wasn't a lot of like black and white, and women felt there was often a mismatch between what their husbands wanted and what they wanted, or they weren't sure how to communicate that. Yeah. I'm not sure if, do you have any strategies for that?
Well, first of all, there is this, again, expectation from media, from outside sources, that says that quantity is the most important thing and not quality. And men think that the more, or not all men, I can't generalize, but a lot of men think that the more sex they have, the better. When it's not the more sex they have, it's the good sex they have, especially if they're in a committed relationship and they're in a, like, and it's an emotional connection and not only a physical connection. Some would say also a spiritual connection. So talking about quantity, it shouldn't be like, oh, I want to have sex just one time a week and my husband should have three times a week. It would be like, how can we connect? The question should be, how are we connecting? How can we connect? And again, how does sex work for us right now? For many women, after having babies, everything moves inside, right? And everything moves during a pregnancy, and then everything moves back after a pregnancy, but it doesn't move back to exactly the same spot as it used to be. So things feel different. So, for example, a lot of women, like, a certain sexual position that used to be very good, very comfortable, is not so anymore because their bladder is just, you know, a few millimeters off, but it is not where it used to be, or they are, and or they're a scar they have right now. So all that needs to be, it can't be assumed that we're going back to it. It needs to be rediscovered as if you're first dating again. But if you're first dating, but you're adult and older and more mature selves, in which you discuss and you're like, hey, that hurts. Or, you know what, that's not comfortable for me. Or I want to try this better. Or I am a little dry, right? Like, nobody discusses how dry you are and how very little you lubricate when you're nursing, because all your liquid is going to your boobs. Nothing's going to your vagina. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what it is that you need and what it is you want. And also for the men, or if you're in a heteronormative partnership, or for your wives or your partners, what it is, how can pleasure be looked at differently? And it can actually be a great moment. I know it sounds like a lot of work, but it isn't if you take it a little bit at a time. Sex after kids can be an incredible moment of reimagining yourself as a sexual being and of reimagining your sexual relationship with your partner or partners after, right? It's not the same. So how can it be different, and how can it be better, and how much more can you communicate? Because we usually don't communicate, right? When we start having sex, we just assume the other will know what we like, which is like the most absurd thing in the world. Like, when we go to a restaurant, we don't assume the waiter or the waitress is going to know what it is that we want for lunch. Mm-hmm. We have to tell them. And if we have specific allergies or a specific things, it's like, I want this Caesar salad, but I don't want croutons. And I want it to, you know, and I want a side of this. Like, oh, okay, that's what you want. So how can we assume, even though they're our partners or will become our partners, that they should know how to touch our bodies? Mm-hmm. They can't know that. It's through experimentation. And that's the fun part of it.
Mm-hmm. And being okay with saying things have changed and this is how I like it, things now. being okay with that, because, not being ashamed, right? Because your partner was there, most likely. If you went through a birth, potentially, he was there. So he knows, like, you went through something and it's okay for you to change after that, and it's okay for your sex life to look different and to not
and to desire something that, and you know what, Carly, it will change again in a few years, because you will go into perimenopause and you go into menopause and things are just not the same and things change and our bodies change. And it's pretty incredible how we expect things to change as we grow older, as we experiment life, as we experience life. We expect things to change, but we don't expect our sexuality to change. We think that it should be in this capsule, in this time capsule, and should remain exactly the same as it was. Mm-hmm. And it can't. And how boring would that be?
Totally.
It needs to move on. It needs to continue. And you know what? The sex you will have after your kids have gone on to university is going to be completely different than the sex you have when you have, you know, little ones sleeping next door.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I love this conversation. This is so good. This is so good. I think this is exactly what I wanted my listeners to hear, right? And I think it's that so many of the things we face as moms, we're looking for like a step-by-step how-to. And more you go through motherhood, you realize there's no step-by-step how-tos, right? It's like looking inside, reconnecting with yourself, taking that time for yourself, making sure you know what you want, and caring for yourself before you try to meet the needs of someone else. And that applies like in motherhood, as well as your partner, as your spouse, right? In your relationship, it all applies. So Kelly, I would love
on yourself first.
Yeah, exactly. Can you please share, Kelly? I will of course include all of this in the show notes and on social media, but please let my listeners know where they can find you and what sort of ways they can work with you. If this has been an episode that they're like, wow, this is something I really want to work on, what are some of the ways that they can work with you?
Sure. Thank you, Carly. Well, you can find me at awokenbeauty.com. That's my website. That's also my Instagram, my Twitter, across all the board, and Facebook, Awoken Beauty. Then I also have a private Facebook group, which is free, a community for women. It's called Awaken by Awoken Beauty. So just look it up. It's right there. You have to answer a few questions for security, to make everybody inside feel safe. So that's how you can find me. And the group is both in Spanish and English, but I'm guessing your English speakers will just want the one in English. Then the way you can work with me, I do workshops. I haven't done one in a while because COVID and three little dragons in the house. Mm-hmm. But I plan on doing some workshops soon. Just check on the website or Instagram. It will be there. And you can always schedule a free session with me. So I do coaching, one-on-one coaching. You can schedule a free session, send me an email through the website or Instagram, and we will schedule it. We will talk, we will get to know each other and decide if we want to work together.
Amazing. Amazing. I think what you're doing is so, so important. It's so valuable. I think, like I've said so many times, we exclude this part of our life, I think, when we become moms, and we forget that, you know, our bodies are amazing things and we deserve to feel good in them, right? And that absolutely. Pleasure is important and desire is important, and it shouldn't be buried under motherhood like so many things are. Thank you so much for joining me, Kelly. This was a really amazing conversation. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. We'll catch you next time. Thank you so much for listening to Mind Over Motherhood. If you love this episode, it would mean the world to me if you could take a screenshot, tag me, and share it on your socials so I know that you're listening. If you have questions or concerns about anything I discussed in this episode or have ideas for new episodes, please reach out to me. I would love to hear from you. Catch you next time.